Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
Today, Ed, we're going to talk about Wally Wood's 22 Panels That Always Work, a pretty famous piece of comics ephemera, comics history. But before we do, let's talk about our own projects for a minute.
Patreon.com/Ed Piskor. I'm serializing my strip, Red Room. The idea is that there are nefarious bad actors out there who are live streaming murders on webcam, on the darknet, using Bitcoin and obfuscating their paper trail when making cash transactions to witness such things. So I'm playing around with the idea that it does exist. This is the world where that kind of thing's going on. There are more than 4 dozen pages up right at this very minute, and new pages go up every Tuesday. We're solidifying the publishing schedule. Probably early next year is when the first issues are going to start coming out. But $3 gets you the archive for early adopters. And we're going bourgeois these days, Jimmy. So there is a hip-hop auction going on at Sotheby's Auction House, New York City, until September 15th. But you can start bidding on items now. And I have 8 lots of artwork up there for bid at this point. But the Buy Me Now option is the Ed Piskor Studio Edition, published by Fantagraphics earlier this year. And all of the material that is being auctioned off sort of came from this PDF. The auction house was like, what do you got? I said, I have a PDF. Take your pick.
Worth noting, the reason you have a PDF of this is because you don't sell very much of your comic art. So collectors out there that have been waiting or looking for it or emailing you about it, this is a good chance to get some choice pieces.
Control supply and demand. Keep the demand high. Keep the supply low. You make more money that way.
Yeah, and for all of you guys at home like me, this is the thing to get to see all of this artwork.
Yes. Jim.
My latest comic, Octobriana 1976, World's First Blacklight Comic, is now available wherever comics are sold. Online, comic shops, you name it, you can find it there. Highly recommend this for people who are fans of printed media and especially weirder comics. No other comic uses ink like this or looks like this. And if you're interested in how I made this, I have a 350-page process zine that is available on my website, jimrugg.com, that gets into all of it, including scans of all the original art, the various drafts of script. So if you're looking for more Octobriana 1976, check that out. And if you're just looking for one of the coolest comics of the year, pick this up at your local comic shop. Wally Wood's 22 Panels That Always Work. This is a fascinating document. The first time I believe it was printed was 1980 in the Wallace Wood sketchbook. This comes from Larry Hama, who put this together while he was working as an editor at Marvel, I believe around 1982 or so. And tracing its origins, Hama was an assistant of Wally Wood. Wood worked with several assistants, and interesting guy, kind of a tragic figure. I don't know if you want to give some context of Wally Wood. You've written an intro for one of his books, so want to give us some context of Wally Wood and his significance historically.
Yeah, of course. Like one of the great early draftsmen in comics. One of those guys who could oscillate between realistic and cartoony by doing, you know, the science fiction stuff that he did for EC Comics with a, you know, luxurious figure work there, bouncing over to the Mad Comic and Magazine, doing super fun cartoony work under the tutelage of Harvey Kurtzman, also a pioneer of self-publishing, you know, with Wit's End, and bringing in creators like Steve Ditko would do a comic, and on the facing page would be an Art Spiegelman, you know, gag strip. The earliest Walt Simonson stuff you're going to see, the earliest Mike Zeck stuff you're going to see, was published in Wit's End. So he had a good eye for stuff.
Around the time of this, one of the things that happened is Wally Wood was going from, say, Mad Magazine to doing some stuff, let's say, for Marvel Comics, early Daredevil. Designed the red Daredevil costume.
Right.
And a lot of shine from Stan Lee. If you see the Daredevils where Wally Wood shows up, like, there's a big announcement on the cover of the issue for Wally, signifying Wally Wood. Like, he was a... He had a reputation, like he was known.
I'm glad you said that, because celebrated on the cover of the first one, he left Marvel in the lurch with his last story, and then on like the follow-up issue, Stan Lee is like, I'm doing my best to write my way out. Like, so he tosses him under the bus a couple months later.
Well, we should, you know, where I'm going with this is his page rates at Mad Magazine at the time, $200 a page. Marvel's page rates at the time, $20 a page. They did recognize Wood was a giant at the time and paid him $45 a page, which was double the, you know, the best Marvel guy and then some. But still a cut of 75% from what he was getting paid at Mad Magazine. And so, you know, he's a romanticized figure in comics history. He ultimately took his own life, you know, and probably maybe that's part of that romanticism. But his work was so loved by fans and collectors and so cherished as being this high point of illustration and comics art that whenever you go from the $200 a page to $45, you have to not noodle, as he would say. And so Larry Hama would talk about these weren't for his assistants. He would hang these things up around, Wally Wood would hang these things up around his studio as a reminder to himself to stop noodling. You know, you're not getting paid for that part. And so this was kind of his way of reminding himself, get in, get done. If you're stuck, if you're at a pause, pick one of these panels and plug it in. And so, you know, that was Hama's kind of story to freelancers whenever he photographed, put this together and photocopied this for freelancers. And the story that I would read is that, you know, he made 25 of these or whatever and starts passing them out. And then pretty soon those are photocopied and those are photocopied and you're getting 10th generations of this.
I got a second generation. Like Phil Felix, my lettering teacher at the Kubert School,
perfect,
was a freelancer at Marvel and got his from Larry Hama. So like that is how I discovered this stuff in the year 2000. Like I got my Xerox of a Xerox, two generations.
Yes.
Away.
It's perfect. I love that story because, like I said, I read about that online. It's cool to actually hear it verified. That's kind of amazing. But, you know, you can see there's a lot of... We looked recently at How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. There's a lot of these books and how-to guides and things. This is a very condensed version of that in a lot of ways. Not so much theory as, hey, you're stuck, grab one of these. Basically, they'll work almost anywhere. And, you know, we can run through them, right? Big Head, what we think of as close-up, extreme close-up, back of head, part of head. This is almost like the action, the shot-reaction shot that you see in filmmaking whenever it's two characters going back and forth. Same kind of thing. Profile, no background. White Bende, dark foreground. That's kind of funny, the white Bende, because, you know, these are production. That's production language. It's almost like comics kayfabe in that nobody Bende doesn't exist today. That would be some kind of digital effect.
Probably the first time I saw that term.
Open panel, complete object, car, plane. Open panel, that's fun to think of too, because a lot of this stuff is language that, you know, cartoonists would understand. Cartoonists think of these kind of full figure open panels. We've heard other cartoonists talk about that. We point it out sometimes whenever we're looking at examples. All black. I feel like Mike Mignola only got this panel. you know, big object, handgun, lamp, phone in the foreground. Reverse silhouette, black or Bende, bottom open. Small figure, Bende, depth, downshot, cast shadows. Reminds me of like the bird's eye view that we looked at in the How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. And there is crossover if you think of photography, film, cinematography. There is kind of a limited arrangement of how many of these types of things you can do. Diagram, eye level, L shape, silhouette, side light or top, reflection, frame. That's a Will Eisner staple. Always great, especially with a window or a doorway. White Bende background and silhouettes. Three stages. So you have your foreground, middle ground, background. This is another one that we point that I always think of with Mike Mignola, because he's able to do the three depths with only black and white. And you see a perfect demonstration of that, where your background and foreground are going to be one value and the middle ground would be the different plane.
That's a cliche.
Yeah. Well, it's media, right? You know, the 80s version of this would be Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns or Howard Chaykin's American Flag, where instead of a newspaper, you're doing screens, you know, screens of the news reporter with exposition and contrast. So kind of, you know, basic things, and it's not as spelled out as How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. But again, this was a speed thing. This was sort of like the working cartoonist's version of how to make comics, you know, how to make good comics on deadline, let's say.
Right, yeah. Like, it received some controversial attention, some critical attention, we'll say, like, in the aughts, we'll say, man, when the Ivan Brunetti Comics Journal interview came out, And his thesis as a comic book teacher is that these are for the illustrator. Like, these are for people who have spent a career receiving lettered pages full of Al Feldstein fucking captions with very limited space to draw, and you have a weekend to draw a comic. It doesn't have much to do with comic book storytelling per se. And Brunetti subsequently created the 22 panels that always work, I believe, or some permutation thereof.
That's an interesting perspective. I mean, it is true those comics were produced very differently than what we do today. Almost anybody, you know, how comics are produced today. So it is interesting to think of this plugging into like the EC system.
Right.
Much differently than plugging into today's comics.
Yeah. But I sort of love this. I live by this, you know, like the Ivan Brunetti stuff. Like, he just comes from a completely different school.
Right.
And his thinking is like, keep everything the same. But if you want visual variety, you wouldn't go in the Brunetti direction.
Very true. Yeah, he has some of his own ideas storytelling wise. Probably worth looking at his idea and his syllabus at some point too. But you know, and again, one more how to make comics, right? One more version of that. I'm gonna read this subtext here. Some interesting ways to get some variety into those boring panels where some dumb writer has a bunch of lame characters sitting around and talking for page after page. Is this Larry Hama's note? You know, I don't know whether that comes from Wally Wood. I don't know if Wood would have bothered to write that out. That feels like a Larry Hama note. If he's going to photocopy this and pass it out to, you know, to pencilers, feels like a Larry Hama note of like, hey, don't just do talking heads, make them a little bit more interesting.
I get the impression that Wally Wood and Larry Hama shared a lot of the same headspace with some of their ideas and just their curmudgeonly natures, we'll say. I wouldn't put it past Wally Wood to say something like that, though, because he's the guy, if you look at the images of him in his like little shack studio, take a good look at that bulletin board in high def, and it says, there is only one Wally Wood, and I am him.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating cartoonist figure. I think of like Dan Clowes doing a Wally Wood little piece, you know. So he's a guy that's revered by cartoonists on both sides of like mainstream and alternative. Obviously, you mentioned Mad Magazine, which I think is where a lot of people might think of his apex, which is outside of his sci-fi, beautiful illustration kind of stuff, which may be another one of his apex.
Another crazy thing, you know, this reminds me, is that he sort of came into prominence at the tail end of The Spirit, illustrating the outer space,
yes,
stories that were written by Jules Feiffer.
Man, that's a good call. I wasn't even thinking of that, Ed. That's something worth looking at,
yeah,
sometime on here. But really good call. That close connection to a Will Eisner, or to the legacy of Will Eisner, for sure. I brought this along. This is an Alex Toth piece, and one of, I think, his more interesting comic strips, very atypical for Alex Toth. And you see, it's kind of this character, it's called Taps, 1981, and it's this character dancing around, and everybody being like, what are you doing? You know, like, you're being kind of a weirdo, and telling him, you know, knock it off, like, this is stupid, no more, that's enough, quit dancing. And he walks off, you know, very sadly. And you see, it's dedicated to Wally Wood and Russ Manning. This was done in their memory, published in their memory after they had passed. And I think it speaks to kind of like, you know, Wally Wood and what his legacy was. I think he was one of the giants of comics, doesn't have a big Marvel DC legacy. And so in some ways, as time passes, we lose sight of him in terms of that Mount Rushmore of very, very influential early cartoonist and early comic book artist. But he's one of the giants of that time and just happened to not be happy with the Marvel DC stuff. You know, maybe one of the early people who were like, nope, that is not going to work for me. See you, Stan Lee.
He does good work and he does reasonable business, but I participated in this two-book set. We'll just go through this real fast. This two-book set from Fantagraphics that kind of covers... it has a lot of essays from a lot of luminaries who came up under him, who love his work and everything. Like I did a introduction to this one, but when you read these, what you discover is that a very clear, you know, hindsight being 2020, very clear places where the guy should have went left when he went right, and in terms of business opportunities and stuff. And the one piece that we didn't mention at all, which is probably, believe it or not, his most popular piece, is the Disney porno orgy drawing, which was in a Paul. It was printed in a Paul Krasner magazine called, I think it's called The Realist, and it was so popular. It was like a centerfold image in there. We've all seen it, and it might be passe to us, or like we might not know it, but your mom knows it. Your dad knows it. Like, that generation was a big image.
I was going to say it's on screen right now, but I'm not sure if we can show that or not.
It's art. at least in here now, we all get to control our own story, but Krasner writes that he gave Wally Wood the option, big cash payment or royalty on lithographs and prints. He took the upfront dough and could have become not a millionaire, but couple hundred thousandaire on that piece alone.
Yeah, that's sad to hear, but certainly not the only artist that has fallen trapped to that kind of a thing.
That upfront dough. If you're going to be in the game for a while, man, you got to think long term.
But definitely something for, we know a lot of our audience is making their own comics out there. Certainly something worth looking at, thinking about, maybe even copying into your sketchbook just to have some different compositions fresh in your mind to apply here or there.
We have comics to make ourselves, huh, Jimmy? Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell. We'll notify you when new videos are available. Octobriana's in shops right now. Red Room strips come out every Tuesday. Patreon.com/EdPiskor. And at this very moment, until September 15th, there is an auction going on at Sotheby's, a hip-hop auction, and I have 8 lots of original artwork available to bid on right at this moment.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the link below this video to keep up with everything we have going on. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe merchandise and t-shirts at the links below this video.
I'm going to need this for my swipe file, Jim. Give these guys their merch orders.
Make more comics.